Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome back to the Scani Johnny podcast. I am your not so humble host, Jonathan Barnett. I'm coming at you from what we call the John Solo version of the podcast. Aaron has some work this week, and he's actually going to have to be up by 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'm recording this later on Monday night, and Aaron's going to have to just listen, and he'll join us back next week. Happy and healthy, hopefully, and everything will be back to where it usually is. Because it is a John Solo, I'm trying to take this a little differently in terms of the music choice here. So hopefully you enjoyed that. Still Cars and Trucks. It's still a Cars and Trucks version here. So I hope you enjoyed that. We definitely love Cars and Trucks, and we've been very thankful to them for allowing us to use their music here. So, we've been gone with the holidays. It's been Christmas, obviously, and New Year's and everything that's going on. Nothing really happened over the holidays. Nothing big, I take it. There was just one or two little stories I guess we'll get to. First thing is obviously the Packers season ended. Packers season ended, and I think that the entire mantra, the entire catchphrase, or if you were writing the book or the NFL Films version of this, I guess the title of it is just, out with a whimper. The Packers walked gracefully, slowly into that good night. They did not fight it. They went down calmly and quietly in a shutout home loss to the Detroit Lions, who were the worst team in the division this year. It was a frustrating sort of loss to a team that the Packers should not lose to, especially not in a home game. And so this was disappointing. It was difficult to watch. And it was one where we saw Aaron Rodgers get hit and have to leave the game early. You never like to see your quarterback getting a concussion. You never like to see anybody getting a concussion. You never know how that's going to deal with anybody or how that's going to affect their life or their career going forward. So we definitely hope that Aaron is well for his own sake, let alone for anything that he possibly could do for the Packers. Just for his own sake, we hope that Aaron is doing well, and look forward to hopefully seeing him again next year. He was elected to a Pro Bowl again. Whether or not he goes, my guess is he doesn't actually go. But he was one of the three NFC quarterbacks in the Pro Bowl. The guaranteed contract man from Minnesota, you know, he didn't go, which is generally what he does. He generally does not end up going to Pro Bowls. But it was a disappointing, kind of sad way of ending it. But it was poetic, almost in so many ways, that they ended in just this utter kind of collapse of a game. There was no Aaron Jones. Devontae Adams, one catch away from tying Sterling Sharpe's single season catch record, didn't play in the final game, dealing with injury. So he ended up at 111 catches at over 1,300 yards. He's the only receiver to be in top five in yards, catches, and touchdowns. Yeah, he didn't play in that game. We lost Aaron Rodgers pretty early in it. We have to remember, this team was playing that game with zero of the defensive line starters, Kenny Clark and Daniels and Muhammad Wilkerson, obviously all out, all on injury reserve at this point. And then if you look at the linebackers, we had Martinez still there from week one. I guess we kind of thought we had Jake Ryan, but we were playing Morrison, who I guess we picked up right before the season started. So week one starter, he was there. We did not have Nick Perry. We had Clay Matthews for whatever good that did us. So of the front seven, we had three starters from week one. We had basically Jaire Alexander in the backfield. Tremont Williams was a starter, but he's playing in a completely different position, so I don't really count that. And that was basically it. We have four of our initial 11 starters on defense still playing, and Mike Pettin still finds a way to make that defense kind of work a little bit. I mean, it's hard because they kept getting put behind the eight ball in terms of what they were able to do and what the offense set them up to do this year. I'll get into what it sounds like is the future for Mike Pettine in a little bit here, because the other big news It's coming out today. It has not been finalized in any sort of way, but the word on the street, the word everybody's already heard on Twitter somewhere, Adam Schefter is tweeting it, Rob Domofsky has definitely been treating it like it's the final word on everything regarding the Packers coaching situation. It sounds like the Packers are calling other teams, calling other candidates, and telling them that they are going to be going with Matt LaFleur. Now, for anyone who hadn't been paying attention, or casual listeners who are just trying to figure out who Matt LaFleur is, he was the guy who was the quarterback coach for the Atlanta Falcons the year that Matt Ryan went and won an MVP, and they eliminated Green Bay from the playoffs. They eliminated Packers from the playoffs that year in the NFC Championship game, and then went on to have that epic collapse in the Super Bowl to the Patriots. It was underneath Kyle Shanahan, so he's somebody who's worked with Kyle Shanahan, worked with that offense, and worked with, you know, the way that he runs things and has got things going on an offensive front. From there, he went and was a non-play calling offensive coordinator, but an offensive coordinator for the LA Rams for a year with Sean McVay. And so that's another good name to have yourself attached to. Those are two young, smart guys who have moved from very successful offensive coordinator careers to becoming at least decently good head coaches. In the case of Kyle Shanahan, he's had his quarterback go down this last year pretty early. So I guess jury's going to be a little out on him yet, but it looks like he knows what he's doing and that he's been pretty decent out there. They're going head-to-head too, so you know only one of them really comes out on top more than the other, at least this season. He did then, Matt LaFleur, that is, go on and become the play-calling offensive coordinator for Tennessee, who is under a new head coach this year, Vrabel. And Vrabel's more of a defensive guy, so he brought in an offensive guy to try to get the offense going. Now, under the traditional looks, the Tennessee Titans were not a spectacularly great offense this year. They had they were lower half in terms of yards per game, points per game, those sorts of things. But they're talking about the big stat you're going to hear. The big stat's been repeated everywhere on Twitter and anywhere I've kind of looked here so far is this next-gen stat. The next-gen stat that they're talking about is highest expected completion percentage. Now, it turns out the Tennessee Titans led the NFL in that stat. They had a 68.7% expected completion rate, highest in the NFL. The Packers, by contrast, this last year were 27th in the NFL at 62.6%. This is from the NFL Next Gen stats, basically, trying to get rid of, like, well, people dropping things, what should have been a completion, how the play is designed, and whether or not you know, it should have worked out to try to talk about, well, the quarterback didn't really mess up. The play should have been a completion. So that's kind of where they're going with that. And he did that with some injuries, some other problems that they had to work through there with that. The quarterback situation, Mariota got hurt early. He was kind of in and out of the lineup. They had to deal with injuries there. They don't have a receiving core that's anywhere approaching Green Bay's at this point. They have Corey Davis, who's been decent. He's been an okay sort of player to step in there as a second-year receiver, but they don't really have any sort of scary anything there. And they kind of did start turning Derrick Henry's career around a little bit. He'd been kind of slow to take over. They really handed the reins to him after the retirement of DeMarco Murray, but he really gained as he kept going, and they kept trying to work that in. And he's going to be good at getting running backs involved in this offense. So I think the big things we got to talk about is that when you're looking at this, the hopeful thing is to say we should expect more innovation. We should expect a guy who's going to find ways to get receivers open, to scheme players open, and also somebody who's going to start using more athletic tight ends, get them more involved in this, and somebody who's worked with high-level quarterbacks, somebody who's been able to get on the same page with his quarterback in several different situations, and also somebody who's going to get Aaron Jones far more involved in this running and passing game going forward. And so that's your hopeful side of this. The other thing we all need to remember on this, and Aaron Nagler had a great tweet about this, is the thing is, we don't know what we're talking about. There's no way that any of us know with any degree of certainty exactly what Matt LaFleur is going to turn into. What we can say is he's got the pedigree that's looked good, and it sounds like he hit the interview very well, because up until today, which is Monday, everybody was saying that this was Daniel's job to lose, or McDaniel's job to lose, you know. This was going to be his job, that he wasn't interviewing anywhere else, that the Packers were going to offer it to him, that there was no reason for this to go any other way, and that he had basically locked it down. Everybody was writing this story. I believe Domofsky had it. I believe Acme Packing Company had it. It was in any number of different places that I've looked so far. I believe Last Word on Sports had something along the same lines. This was a story that this was just McDaniel's job. And now we're hearing that it's going to be Matt LaFleur. And by the time that you guys have all read this, maybe he's, or you're listening to me by Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever you're going to look at this, it might be that he's already accepted the job. At the time that I'm recording this, which is Monday night again, and behind the lens here, behind the curtain, it's after 11 o'clock p.m. here on Monday night. But at this point, I don't have that it's been accepted in any way. I don't necessarily have that it's been offered, but the word is it's going to be offered to him, and that's going to be his job. I don't know what else you can take from that. You wonder at some extent, and we will never really know the answer to this, is my guess, based on how tight-lipped the Packers tend to be, especially behind the scenes in terms of how they made decisions or how they did things like that. We are never going to know exactly how much the McDaniels-Colts scenario played into this, because we're just never going to hear somebody come out and tell us, you know what, we really rubbed this wrong. A lot of teams didn't give him interviews, and a lot of it was based on that. He burned a team, and he burned them and hurt them hard. I mean, they clearly bounced back very well, as they're going to be playing in the divisional round this week, moving forward in the AFC playoffs. But he accepted a job. He started hiring staff. He had coordinators and stuff in line. He had people who were going to leave their other teams to come to work for him. And then he just stepped away from it and went back to the Patriots. And it sounds like a lot of teams don't enjoy that. A lot of teams have kind of held that against him. And that's going to be a hard thing. There's only a couple teams who are going to just not care enough, especially for a guy who hasn't really lit it up. And by the way, Belichick coordinators have not exactly gone on to do amazing things. One of the few ones we had was, you know, Mangini had a couple-year run there. We haven't seen anything from a lot of guys. We've talked about this several times. Aaron and I have gone over this. Bill O'Brien's one of the few ones who's really had sustained success, but none of this ever turned into an AFC championship game appearance even. It's been, you know, like this year. He has a good year. They win the division, and then they lose in the first round. I don't know if that's the greatest sort of success you can look for, but it's at least sustained relevance is something he's been able to do. And a lot of those coaches coming out of there have not been that. Look at Matt Patricia, and we'll see what he's been able to do so far. Maybe he'll prove that he's something better later, but he has not been particularly interesting so far. And all that we've learned about Matt Patricia is he does not care to show up on time for anything at this point. So I guess we'll see. It's going to be an interesting thing going forward. So that's what we're looking for in the Packers. We'll get into talking about where we're going to be looking at the draft and what's going to be happening. And for everybody who is rooting, you know, against anything in terms of, well, the Packers ruined their whatever draft picks, the idea that the Packers would have picked 8th instead of 12th if they had just lost to the Jets, who cares? I really hate the idea that everybody is getting very worked up over that, man, those four draft pick positions. This isn't the NBA. In the NBA, there are between 3 or 5, sometimes 2 and 5 players worth really getting. Those are the sorts of players that can change a team. There's only 5 guys on the court. One player makes a gigantic difference on a team, and they play both ways. I mean, they're on the floor the entire time. They'll be playing more minutes than anyone else. In football, you're going to draft one player who's going to be 1 of 11 half the time. And even with that, even with the game-changing players, even with the people who change this thing and make your team insanely better, there's no guarantee you're getting them in the top 10. There's no guarantee they're one of the top 5. The difference between 8 and 12 is basically nothing. The stuff, I mean, Mike Heller's been running a lot of it. Some other people have been going on Twitter talking about it, how they ruin themselves by not going after the draft picks and trying to tank. It doesn't work to tank in the NFL. It's not the NBA. And we keep getting into the NBA mindset about the NFL, and it just doesn't work that way. There's no added value from 8 to 12 that makes it worth just stopping playing. I mean, the Packers were trying to evaluate how these young receivers are going to be working going forward with their quarterback that's going to be playing the games next year, week one. And if they're going to do that, they need to be doing it when reps with the quarterback they have, who will be starting next year, week one. Let them get their reps. They need to keep playing. They need to play with the guy who they're going to get in sync with, hopefully. And to tell them that we just need to stop doing all the developing. We need to stop all those things because we really need to be the top five pick. Which, who knows who that'll be or how that'll work. You don't know what teams are going to screw up their picks. So, that entire conversation needs to end. And it's just beyond me that that's happening in the NFL. Moving on from our main segment there. Obviously, the biggest most important thing in these things are always the Packers. But the thing that everybody can be at least excited about is the Milwaukee Bucks are still hanging out there right around the top of the East. It's them. They were number one for a little while. They had a 5-game winning streak, moved ahead of Toronto, and then they had the big game with Toronto. It didn't go really as they wanted. 123-116 loss to Toronto. It was a home loss. They'd won the previous two against Toronto. This game, everybody was on board. Everybody was playing. Giannis Antetokounmpo put up 43 points, 18 rebounds, 4 assists. And that wasn't enough. They had double digits from Middleton, Bledsoe, Brogdon, Hill, and Brown. If you can't win by getting double-digit points for that many players, it's hard to deal with. You got 116 points. They've been a very good defensive team this year. Their plus-minus has been very nice. And plus-minus is something they stole from hockey. It's a great way of looking at things, especially when you've got people playing both ways. But still, it was just not enough to get that game done. Toronto came by. They were able to get more plays. They were able to get more times just at the hoop and overcame Giannis playing kind of superhero. I mean, he had 43. The next highest was Middleton with 14. Well, and Bledsoe also with 14. Oh, I'm sorry, Brogdon with 15, and then Bledsoe and Middleton both with 14. Nobody else gets into 20s at that point. We've got a lot of guys who are good at getting some points and adding on to it. This team needs to start trying to find if they can get somebody else there. And Aaron said it a couple times. He doesn't think that this is done. There's always a chance that they make a move, that they go out and get somebody. This offseason, if the Bucks make a push and they get to that Eastern Conference Finals game, I think there's a really good chance they're going out and they're going to get a name. And I think they're going to be able to get somebody who knows they can play with Giannis. Giannis right now, let's look at these. I mean, he's not the MVP at this point in the season. He's not getting enough of the talk. A lot of times because he's not the self-promoter that you maybe need to be in the NBA. But here he is. I mean, he's ninth in points per game, 26.5. He is also seventh in rebounds per game, 12.6. Now, there are two players who are above him in both points and assists. Two players who are ahead of him in both those categories, and that's Anthony Davis and Joel Embiid. Both those guys are ahead of him in both those categories, but ninth and seventh in those. And then he's also 17th in assists, 6.1 per game. He's having a great year, but the NBA is about scoring. It's not about being an all-around player unless you're going to get a triple-double. If you're going to average a triple-double like Westbrook, then that's wonderful and you're going to get things. But this is a scoring league. This is a league about who puts up the most points and also winning games because they assign wins to stars. So it's going to be somebody from one of those teams that's getting the big wins, that's getting the big points, and it's going to be somebody like Harden, or it's going to be somebody like LeBron, who is, the Lakers are nothing without him at this point. They were 1-4 this season, I believe, in times when he's not playing. Giannis is great. Giannis is amazing. If Giannis had a little bit more help around him, I think he could be the MVP. He's trying to do this all, and he's got to kind of work on more of the shooting. He drives great. And the thing is, he's the sort of person who gets better at everything every year, and he works at it. And he's definitely added to his shooting. He's definitely added to his free throw percentages every year. But he needs to continue doing those things, and he's got forever to do it. He's very, very young. He's going to be an MVP in this league at some point. The Bucks lost that, obviously, the terrible game to Toronto, but they bounced right back and beat the Utah Jazz. So out of seven games, they won six of their last seven, and they're still hanging out right there with Toronto. So this is definitely a good team, and it's going to be very exciting. I don't see how they don't end up in the Eastern Conference Finals at this point. But you know, it's not my league. Without Aaron here, you're talking to somebody who, I mean, is just kind of following the league and looking at it. But I'm not sitting down at night watching these games. I'm not watching a game that doesn't have the Bucks in it, that's for sure. And I guess the biggest thing for me on this is just that the NBA is the most predictable league. The Bucks at this point in the year are the best team in the East, or the second best. And it plays out the way it's already played out. By this point, you know who the teams are. They could cut the season short now and start the playoffs. It'll be the same as if they end the playoffs in, 6 months, whenever they end the playoffs, because the NBA season goes on forever, somehow. But that's where we are with the Bucks, and we're feeling very happy about them. We should be very excited about the idea. I mean, they're a good team. They're a winning team. They got young talent, and they got a lot of players there and good coaching. And it's almost enough to make me watch the NBA. So that's how good they are at this point. If we're going to talk Badger football just briefly, the one thing we do want to say is that there was the Under Armour, the All-American high school game with all the All-Americas. Logan Brown got some really good snaps. He looked good in practice. The couple things that he was doing very well there that looked very interesting. He's going to be great for the Badgers, and we're very excited to have him coming in. But the only thing that anybody who was not some sort of scout or college evaluator, which I follow several people, Owen Reese from Bucky's Fifth Quarter, great follow if you want to look at some evaluation. He's a former lineman himself, so he gets you some really good stuff on Logan Brown. Follow him on Twitter. The news, though, that we were all following, that everybody is talking about, is Graham Mertz. And Graham Mertz set the All-American game record for most touchdown passes in the game. He threw five touchdowns. Five touchdowns. The record was three. Now, it's great to be able to see something like that. We'll say also that Hornibrook was a fairly decently well-regarded recruit. I believe he was a three-star in most categories, or most rating systems at least. And he was somebody who was initially committed to Crist at Pittsburgh and then came over redshirted and has been, obviously, with the Badgers starting the last several years. But Graham Mertz just, he lights it up. Some of the videos I've seen from that practice are ridiculous. And the fact that he went into a game full of all-stars. I mean, he went into a game, it's like he went to a game against Alabama kids. I mean, granted, he had a ton of great receivers with him and a ton of good offensive line, but he was playing in a game with the best. Playing in a game with the best, and he was the best there. He was the MVP of the game. You have to be excited as a Badger fan going forward of what this looks like. We've got a very young receiving core. We got a bunch of guys who are in their sophomore season. AJ Taylor, Danny Davis, guys like that who are going to be around for a couple more years probably. And we're going to have Graham Mertz coming in. And if he's going to compete for the job. I can't say that I think he's necessarily going to get it right away. But he's got a really good shot at taking that. And he's an exceptional talent. And he's confident. And if you follow him on Twitter, man, that kid wants to play with these other guys. He's been tweeting and going back and forth with the other players from this recruiting class for a while. He's a leader, and it sounds like they all enjoy each other already. And I'm hoping for great things coming forward from him. And I think we all are. This is the time of the year to live on hope, because pretty soon they're going to start playing games, and that's gonna get us into just reality again. So good things there. In more Badger news, because we have more Badger news, and this is kind of where we start wrapping up everything, because we're going to go into, first off, Badger basketball. Men's basketball team had a rough stretch in the time that Aaron and I were not getting together on this podcast. Consecutive losses to teams they should not have lost to. They lost on the road at Western Kentucky, 83-76. They were leading at half in this game. They lost the second half 53-42. That's a ridiculous loss. You cannot lose to the Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky. You can't have that game when you're a top 25 team with some very serious talent here. And I don't understand how this happened. I guess we kind of do. They were not hitting threes, they have not hit 50% over the last three games in terms of regular field goal percentage. Here's the breakdown. The next game they had was another loss, this time at the Kohl Center to the Minnesota Golden Gophers. And that's, again, you can't lose to Minnesota and Wisconsin. You can't lose to them at home. You can't lose home games to lesser conference opponents. They lost 59-52. And this is the game where they shot 41.2% from free throw. They lost by 7 points. They shot 7 of 17. If they make 7 more and just shoot 14 of 17, I mean, well, that's a pretty high percentage. It's a pretty decent percentage, but that's a tie game there. They also shot, in that game, 22.7% from 3. And this is where it was going. Initially, when talking about the Hilltoppers game, the Badgers were shooting terribly from 3-point. And if they can't get their 3-point shots off, they can't win. They can't. At this point, that's what the way it looks here. They, against Western Kentucky, from the field, not just 3-pointers, 45.6% from the field. Against Minnesota, 41.7%. The next game, which was a big win against Penn State, 19-point win, 71-52 at Penn State. They shot 49.2% from the field. 49.2, that's not good. I mean, you should be shooting better than 50%. I mean, it's not bad. It's just you should get over 50. You're playing a lesser opponent. You should be able to shoot 50% from the field. I mean, a bunch of those are layups or shots around the rim, and you need to get those things done. Badgers shot 28.6 from 3 against Western Kentucky and 22.7, as I said, against Minnesota. When you're shooting under 33% out there, it's difficult to win, especially with the volume of shots that the Badgers put up. Now, against Penn State, the Badgers shot 50% from 3. 50% from 3. They were, and they took, it's not like they went 2 of 4. They went 8 of 16 from 3. And they still shot under 50% from the field. They were better off shooting from 3 than they were shooting inside the 3-point line. And that's a ridiculous game. They won that game, obviously, but that's a ridiculous stat to have. Now, against Minnesota, 41.2% from the free throw line. Against Western Kentucky, they actually shot 72.7. And against Penn State, they only shot 5 free throws. They were 3 of 5. 60% for the math people. The free throw problem is getting ridiculous. And I have people say, like, well, it's a free throw. They call it free for the reason. I was like, yeah, the throw is free. The points aren't free. You have to get those. And there's no magic to it. We just have people on this team right now who are not good at shooting free throws necessarily. Hap especially. Hap just, he's had 4 years to work out shooting a free throw during important games. And it's something he's never gotten particularly better at. And I don't understand that. I don't know the answer to that. There's no, you know, there's not like one drill that everybody does that's just going to make him better or anything like that. He's got to just, there's something wrong with the way he shoots in games. And I'm sure he goes in practice and they find ways to make it stressful for him and just make him practice shooting the ball under pressure. But it doesn't seem to get anywhere. And eventually it's just going to be something he either does or doesn't do. And at this point, Ethan Happ just, he doesn't shoot free throws under pressure. He doesn't do it well. He doesn't particularly get it done in that level of the game. And they should just foul him every time if they can. Obviously, you only get 5 fouls, but it's something that he would be unstoppable if he could do it right. And he's not doing it right. And that's definitely hindering his game, and it hinders this Badger team. Getting a win against Penn State, the Badgers stay right now third place in the Big Ten. They're still ranked 22. They've been obviously ranked higher than that before they had some of these trials here. But this team is still, you know, they're going to find their stroke again. Everybody has rough patches when you are a shooting team. And the Badgers are a shooting team. They're not losing it on defense. They're playing pretty good defense. I mean, they gave up 59 to Minnesota, 52 to Penn State. They had a bad day against Western Kentucky, who outshot them badly in that second half. But this team is still playing defense. This team still will score. They're getting their shots off. You know, some days they're not hitting. They need to figure out the free throw problem at some point if they want to be a serious team down the stretch, get it back to a Sweet 16 or something. But this team's very likely to get there. This team definitely has the ability to do it. They got the character to do it. They got the leadership to do it. And I think they're going to be all right. This is just going to be a small rough patch, I think, in the long run of what the season is. So it's not time to freak out about the Badgers just yet. I think they'll come around. The shots will start falling. And they'll have to get ready quickly because Friday, the 11th here coming up, they're going to be playing against Purdue. And Purdue is a team that definitely gives the Badgers fits. Moving on to more Badgers news, Badgers hockey, after, you know, we started seeing some improvement, some strides forward. They were playing great games against Penn State. They played Michigan pretty much head up. They went into overtime twice, lost in shootout, lost in an overtime. They were playing some great games against really tough competition. This week they had coming off of the winter break. I mean, they get winter break as a college situation, so they had winter break. They didn't play for a little while, and they came back and they went to the Kohl Center, and that's where they ran into number 8 Denver University. Yes, everybody. I know it sounds weird to say this, but college hockey has some number 1 ranked teams and top 10 teams that you don't hear in other sports. But Denver, I think they're the pioneers. Denver is a very good hockey team. They've been great for years. An old WCHA foe for the Badgers. They came in. They lost 6-3 on Friday. They came back on Saturday, though, and they were up. Mersch got a goal, put them up 3-2. 3-2 in the third period. Badgers looking pretty good heading into the third period. Just had to try to maintain it. They were playing great. They were getting good forecheck. They had good energy. They were playing good defense. This is a very, very good team that they were playing. And they went out there. They gave up a late equalizer to Denver and went into overtime and took an overtime loss. So they get a point out of it, but they still take the loss in overtime. Very tough home loss there. It's difficult. This team has definitely had a little trials and tribulations. They've been getting better as they've been going along, and we'll see. This is not going to be a tournament team this year. This isn't. College hockey has far fewer teams in a tournament. They have 16, and this is not going to be one of the teams that makes it. They're going to need to get their RPI much higher, and they're going to start to need to win several of these type of games to get to that level. Because I don't think they're going to win the Big Ten. I mean, they could put on a run like that at the tournament at the end, but it really does look like they're going to have to try to find a way to start winning some of these games if they want to try to make it into the tournament this year. Tough losses for Badgers men's hockey. Badgers women's hockey didn't play. They start back up again Friday the 11th, I forget who they're playing right away, but they'll get back next week. We'll talk about Badger women again next week. Still number 1. So it's always good there. And the last little bit that we always give you, college Division III hockey for Wisconsin teams, the two big ones now. I guess St. Norbert is number 6. St. Norbert over by Green Bay. They're number 6 in the country right now. But UWSP remains number 1. This weekend, they had a road stretch, and Eau Claire had a road stretch. Both of them went into Minnesota. Eau Claire is now number 3. So number 1 and number 3, both in Wisconsin. Stevens Point went to Concordia in Minnesota and beat the Concordia Cobbers. I didn't make that up. The Cobbers Cobbers. They beat them 3-2, and the next day they went over and they played the St. Olaf Olies. Also didn't make that up. They are actually the Olies. They beat them 8-2. Now, UW Eau Claire came in. They played the Gustavus Adolphus Golden Gusties. I mean, you can't make up Minnesota Division III school names. I mean, St. Thomas Tommies, St. John's Johnnies, St. Olaf Olies, St. Gustavus Adolphus Golden Gusties. I don't know what else you can say about that. Anyhow, they beat Gustavus Adolphus 1-0, and then they played Concordia. The same Concordia Cobbers, they beat them 8-1. That's good. UWSP has some tough games coming up. They're going to be playing against number 4 Augsburg at home at KB Willett Arena Friday, January 11th, and then they get to go play those St. John's Johnnies. That's just a little bit of roundup that we like to give you at the end, the tail end of our talk here, getting you some hockey talk here for Wisconsin, because you can't really have a Wisconsin sports show if you're not going to talk hockey. In other news, over the just, I guess, little hockey thing here, and I'm going to round it into house Badgers news, or at least Wisconsin news. The Blackhawks played at Notre Dame Stadium in the Winter Classic, which is a wonderful outdoor tradition for hockey, and they lost 4-2, I believe, to the Boston Bruins. Now, I root for the Boston Bruins. I love them because we don't have hockey, professional hockey, in the state of Wisconsin, even though we have the highest attendance rate for college hockey. For our D1 team, Wisconsin has a larger arena than Minnesota, so Wisconsin does very, very well in that regard. But we don't have pro hockey here. And again, remember that the reason that we don't have pro hockey in Wisconsin is because the Blackhawks ownership continually blocked it. The Tampa Bay Lightning were going to be a Wisconsin team, and the Blackhawks ownership blocked it because they're afraid that they will lose viewership. And so the only reason that there is not pro hockey in Wisconsin is the Chicago Blackhawks. So once again, Chicago out there attempting to ruin everything for all of us living north of that that little border down there. So just remember that going forward, all you wonderful hockey fans, that we could have a Milwaukee Admirals NHL team or something like that, but the Blackhawks have stopped it. In terms of our schadenfreude for Chicago, though, it's been more than met this week watching the double doink, as it was called, watching the Bears eliminate from the playoffs on a blocked field goal that hit two uprights on its way to landing short in the end zone. And there's some talk locally, in central Wisconsin at least, about whether or not you should feel any sort of joy over watching the Bears lose. And I'll tell you, I jumped off the couch. I don't like the Bears. I don't have anything against their fans. I have several friends who are Bears fans. What I think about Bears fans is that they're generally very knowledgeable. They understand football. They've been fans their entire life, and they will watch every game regardless of how bad the Bears are. I think they're loyal. I think they're knowledgeable. And they're very similar. I understand them. I just don't want their team to win. I don't like the Bears. I don't like the franchise, and I want them to lose all the time. And they want us to lose all the time, so I respect that, and that's fine. Now, the thing with Minnesota is more that I don't really care about the Vikings as an organization anyway. They're never threatening, particularly. They do have good seasons here and there, but they're not a championship team. They're not a championship organization. But Vikings fans are far more annoying. But as we pointed out in some of my Twitter, if you followed me on Twitter recently, we're not going to have to worry about them for a while because Vikings fans aren't going to exist until next year when they start advertising and asking people to buy Vikings tickets, please. But we'll see how that goes. But for the meantime, you don't have to worry about them because there are no Vikings fans. So that's at least a small blessing, is Chicago knocked out the Vikings before the Eagles then came in and knocked out the Bears. So we've just got some interesting football going forward, but we don't have to root against anybody except for maybe the Cowboys. But anyhow, this has been just a quick, at least kind of quick. Things go a little faster, and I get to talk a little faster when we don't have Aaron here. We miss you, Aaron, and we'll talk to have Aaron back here next week. Hopefully, as long as everything goes as planned. And we'll look forward to having you back with us again next week. Sorry about the long hiatus here over the holidays, but it's good to have you back, and it's good to be back here talking Wisconsin sports. So remember, you can find me on Twitter at jbarn54. You can find Aaron at Cheddar Talk, which is the shortest way that you'll ever hear anybody mentioning Cheddar Talk. You can also find the show at ScannyJohnny1. Or you can email us at scannyjohnny@gmail.com. And, of course, remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, that it is always on Wisconsin.